Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Manoush Zomorodi, sitting in for Brian Lehrer here on WNYC. And we all know the story of American history, the American Revolution, the Civil War, the Civil Rights Movement. Or at least we think we know the story. Now there's a new book that offers a different take, a contrarian's take on U.S. history. It's a graphic novel that provides an alternative look at the stories we think we know and highlights many that we don't. Ilan Stavins is Lewis Sebring Professor of Latin American and Latino Culture at Amherst College. He's the author of the new book, A Most Imperfect Union, A Contrarian History of the United States. Ilan, welcome to the program.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So, listeners, we're going to take your calls on this one. What chapter of U.S. history would you like to rewrite? Do you or your family have an experience that you just do not see represented in the history books? Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Now, Ilan, the book opens with an illustration of you saying that you're taking a contrarian viewpoint. What does that even mean? Explain it to us.
Well, it means that it is enough with the traditional white male European approach to our past, that the past is always up for grabs, and that the country has been undergoing a dramatic transformation. Prior to 1950, the majority of immigrants came from the old continent. After 1950, we are all coming from Asia, from Latin America, from Africa, from the Caribbean. It is time our textbooks, it is time our view of the past reflects the transformation that is undergoing the country, and that we don't focus, as we have for such a long period, on the heroic figures. We see what others have done. The history is not what two or three or four Abraham Lincolns and the John Adams and George Washingtons did, but the armies, the servants, the workers, the comedians, the immigrants that were near them had to say. And the purpose of the book is to deliver that history, or at least to propose an alternative history, to show that to be an American is to be a contrarian, to have a different point of view. What makes us Americans is precisely the freedom we have, in that we can exercise that freedom in the way we read our past.
Now, it's kind of interesting. In the book, the tone you take is not sort of finger wagging at all. It's kind of funny, lighthearted.
Right.
It's, you know, comics, essentially. So tell us, what are some of your favorite sort of stories that you've included in the book that you feel that have not been in history books before now?
Sure. One of my big qualms as a Mexican-American is the way that the civil rights era is represented. Indeed, it has been the battle between the white majority and the African-American minority, but there were many other players that played a fundamental role during the 60s. I'm talking about Chicanos, I'm talking about Filipinos, I'm talking about Puerto Ricans. We seem to still be stuck in the view that the civil rights era was in black and white, when we as a country have moved into technicolor, and it is time to see that there was brown and there was yellow and there were colors in between. That is one episode. Another important episode is the fact, more recent, of the way we remember 9/11. We remember them by the names that we have put in the memorials that we have built for ourselves. But those memorials reflect only those that were legal and documented, and those that perished in the very same atrocities that were not registered, that were not civilians, have been left out. And it is, I think, time to recognize that we are here embracing the human experience and not the club that we describe as Americans. I'm often stuck by the fact that when a plane from wherever has gone down, the newspapers still stress that 230 people died, and five of them were Americans, and then the names of the Americans come out.
Mm.
The book tries to bring humor. Today, the way Americans get the news, the way they approach the world, is through Comedy Central, is through stand-up comedy. And what the book tries to do is use humor to provoke a different way of reading the past.
Listeners, we want to hear from the contrarians out there. We want to know if there's a chapter of history that you would like to rewrite. Do you have a personal story that you think, you know, history just doesn't get the experience of you or your family, despite the fact that you live here in the United States? Professor, I want to ask you, you know, you mentioned you're a Mexican-American. So how does your own immigrant experience shape the way you think about American history?
I think that the immigrants are Americans in a peculiar, emphatic way. We live at a time when immigrants are seen as the lumpen, as the second rate, as the ones that are stealing our hospital beds and classroom places. The difference is that immigrants came here by choice or persecuted, and they decided to come here. I see immigrants much like I see converts to a new religion. They needed to learn the history from scratch. It didn't come to them by osmosis. They needed to make it their own, and they also have a say, for that very reason, in how that history should be taught. I think that my experience as an American is a Mexican that came to this country is the experience of one who said, in Mexico, I couldn't find the atmosphere to be a writer, to debate ideas. I am also Jewish, and Jews in Mexico did not have the space to reflect on their Jewishness in the public sphere. I wanted to come to this country because this was a place where I thought that I could find a voice, in a voice that would be about the opening of the American mind. And 30 years later, I immigrated in the mid-80s. I have the impression that the American mind has been closing up, that instead of reflecting, debating, and embracing others that have come from the outside, that we have shut doors and we denigrate those that come thinking that they are stealing something from us. And I turned 50 not too long ago and thought I can either keep on complaining that this American mind is closing, or I can try to do something about it. And the writing of this book is an attempt to say that history belongs to anyone that has come here and embraced this idea, but the idea of being an American is still in the making, and we are the actors, we are the participants, we are the ones that revise the past.
Listeners, let us know what you think about revising history, America's history. You can call us at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Professor, this idea of a graphic novel, I guess technically your book is not a graphic novel because it's nonfiction, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But why does the term still apply here for the sticklers out there?
I think it's a wonderful question. I think we have run out of words. We apply the term graphic novel to anything that mixes images and text. But there's lots that are not graphic novels, retellings of the past that are done in non-fictional ways, but use this combination of illustrations and text. I wanted to do this. I wanted to use the graphic novel format because it seems to me, I have been a teacher for over 20 years, it seems to me that we have a wonderful new generation of students coming to the fore. It is a generation that has grown up with images, in that it is telling us that we are probably transitioning from a strictly textual culture to a culture that is much more graphic, that is iconic in the sense of how images are used. Many of us grew up reading novels. Many of our children and our students grew up watching and re-watching movies, and the memories of watching those movies or the television shows become an essential picture of how they build their identity. They see the world in texts, but they also see the world in images, and I wanted to reach that generation. I think much of what happens in the classroom is a lab of what happens in society and vice versa. Many of the ideas that I have as a writer start in the classroom and then come back to the classroom, but are intrinsically connected with how I write or how I try to communicate. And I would say then it's really my students who have taught me how to think in images.
But it's so interesting to me also how, you know, as much as the makeup of the United States changes, the stories of people who want to come here pretty much stay the same. I was just reading this morning in the New York Times the horrific things that children in Honduras are escaping, and the reason why so many of them are trying to get into this country. There still is that sort of archetypal storyline, right, of that this is a safe haven, a place to come to. That doesn't change, right? Or am I just being contrarian?
No, they're in the beauty. That doesn't change, but change is always a constant. We are all archetypes. We are the professor or the writer or the newscaster or the president, but we are also individuals within those archetypes. All the children that are arriving from Honduras and from other parts of Central America are just children, the way African slaves that were children arrived, or the Irish, or the Italians, or the Jews that came in the 19th century. But they are also individuals. They are the one child from Tegucigalpa that needed to escape. And that child is defined by that particular story. So where the history of the United States is defined by this huge bank of archetypes, it is also shaped by millions of individuals who come and offer their particular voices, their particular experiences, and those experiences make us who we are. So we're always the same, we're always different.
Always the same, always different. I want to talk to Robin, line 5 in Long Island. Robin, what's your background? What do you think, what history lesson do you think needs a makeover?
My personal background is not what I'm calling about, but it is the collective background of the Native Americans who were here before any of us immigrated to this country. And I feel that their history has been ignored. What has been done to them over hundreds and hundreds of years has been ignored. And if it was better taught and better understood, then the whole concept of who is an immigrant and what is an immigrant and the place of the immigrant would be more properly in focus.
So, Professor Stavins, how do you tackle the Native American question? Because that is one thing that consistently people have criticized.
I couldn't agree with more with the caller. And I would invite your listeners to think, just for a second, because I am a lover of words, about the difference of terms that we use to describe those that come to this country. We call them immigrants, but we call them settlers. We call them refugees. We call them exiles. What is the difference between a settler and an immigrant? Why weren't the settlers in the Mayflower called immigrants? And why aren't immigrants today that are arriving for the very first time to a town in Montana that has very few people in terms of population not called settlers? What's the difference between someone that comes as an exile running away from another country and someone who chooses to come to this country because of a search for freedom or a desire to improve? Semantically, we have a whole array of possibilities, and yet by the choice of words that we make, we automatically define those in one way or another. Native Americans have been here way before the rest of us. They are neither of those categories. They are not immigrants or settlers, although they could be described as internal immigrants. They have been forced against their will to go from one side of the country to another. And in that, we can all understand what the abandonment of a home might mean. I think that your caller is absolutely right. The history of the world will always be the history of those that triumphed and those that were victimized. But it is important, it is crucial to recognize that the victims transform themselves and become powerful entities, and that the future we often think is the one that is up for grabs. I would suggest that it's the past that is always changing, and that histories that have been an undercurrent, that have been obliterated, that have been ignored, at some point, because the present changes, are moved into the center and become much more powerful. And in giving them power to those narratives, we're also giving power to the people that inherited those narratives.
We have to leave it there. Professor Ilan Stavins, author of the new graphic novel, A Most Imperfect Union, A Contrarian History of the United States. Thanks so much for joining us, Professor.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Tomorrow on The Brian Lehrer Show, I already told you this, there's going to be a family meeting. It's a great show. It's an encore performance. I'm Anusha Marodi sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Listeners, do you feel like it's so easy to bank 24/7 or go online, shop anytime, but there are still some things in your life that seem to be sort of existing in the past, like how you communicate with your doctor? That's what we're going to talk about next, coming up.